You can start over.
Shoot, we weren't recording and it was really good stuff.
I was so bummed I wasn't taking notes thinking I was going to get it later. So good.
Should I start at the beginning again?
I got a lot of it on notes.
Would it bother people if I just started again for the recording so you have it? Okay. Okay, thumbs up. Okay, so to recap. And bring us all back onto the recording with what we talked about. I introduced the concept of the lake as this field of awareness within which our mind, our samskaras, the totality of our being is. And we use the concept that the surface of the lake, which I drew this little, so it's kind of like, it's the waves at the surface of the lake. These are the samskaras. These are the patterns of thought that kind of are with us all the time, right? That like Ramon was talking about, that Kathleen was talking about, I was talking about, these everyday thoughts that, you know, the thoughts that always have you worrying about the future, the thoughts that always have you worrying or trying to control and plan. Okay. And then there are the deeper patterns that they say are actually the formation of the lake bed underneath. It's not just smooth sand. It's troughs in the sand. And these troughs in the sands are called the vasanas. And then I use the example of how if you go to, you know, the beach, I'm hoping everybody's been to a lake or a beach. When at the shoreline where the ocean floor is pretty, you know, smooth and even, the waves have a certain, and they're more caused by the wind, right? The wind. As you move out, and some of you know this, right? There's a point where maybe the ocean drops off, boom. And that's the point where different kinds of waves start forming. And I was talking about this place my husband had mentioned in Portugal where there's such a deep cavern in the ocean floor that it creates huge 100 foot waves that these surfers love to surf on in the winter, I believe it is. And it's not caused by the wind. It's not caused by the thoughts. It's caused by a deep, deep pattern in the ocean floor. And if we think of the vasanas as that, these deep patterns that we cannot see, they're not in our everyday thoughts, but they are shaping our thoughts. They're shaping the samskaras. They're shaping these patterns. And so what part of our journey is to try to find those vasanas. And the way is start with sensation. Your sensations in your body are the portal into first the samskaras, the everyday thought patterns. My chest is tight. It's dense. It's heavy. Okay. I'm worried about what's going to happen in the fall when my kids go back to school. Oh, I'm worried about, you know, am I going to lose my job? I'm worried about the housing market. Is my house losing? I'm worried. I'm in the future. But these are patterns of our thinking that are with us all the time. Samskaras. But underneath those, if we can be with the sensation, use that as in a portal to the awareness of the samskaras, which you've done. Which you have been doing. From there, we use these skills meditation has taught us to be still in the body, to not run away from the sensation, not run away from the surface thoughts, so that we can dive deep and actually try to discover and see what are these underlying thoughts underneath all of this that are the source of my fear, my dread, my frustration, my shame, my angst, my nervousness. And so then, as an example, I was starting to share a an experience I had years ago that I totally forgotten about. And I found, I was going through paperwork here, cleaning out the office a few weeks ago, and I found this. And I'm going to just share it with you. It was an exchange I sent with my teacher, and it was an exchange we had back and forth. So I'm going to start at the beginning again. It goes, "Dear Sally, I spent the last week noticing my thought patterns and really contemplating the metaphor of the waves as samskaras and the formations on the lake floor as vasanas. And I wanted to share the beautiful synchronicity of events that transpired over these last few days. Over the weekend, I went into urgent care and was diagnosed with diverticulitis. In the process, my blood test showed that my thyroid was dangerously out of whack." Yeah, it was like 13. So I'm going to just put that in here. So people who understand thyroid will know it was like dangerous. They were like, you know, get this woman on medication, right? So I decided to look at what thoughts could be underneath these events. This was on Sunday. And I wasn't getting much, but my chest felt dull and heavy. So that was Sunday. I just stayed present, sensation, dull and heavy. That's where I was on Sunday. Monday, I had an opportunity to go into a meditative state. Actually, I believe I was out here in my office when it happened. I was been out here and I just stopped what I was doing and I just stayed with the sensation. And using the visual of the lake water, I started by simply allowing the physical sensations present in my body to become a portal into the thought patterns. My chest felt heavy, dense, hopeless, and suffocating, which brought up thoughts like, I don't want to do anything. I don't have the energy to do anything. And there's so much to do, and none of it is stuff I want to do. And so just for yourself, what is your equivalent of those thoughts that you don't want to even admit you have? Because to admit that I don't want to do anything, that I don't, there is nothing on my plate that I want to do. When I'm, you know, I'm a meditation teacher. I love this shit. I'm starting this business. I have my kids. I have my grandkids. None of it. None of any of it. I don't want any of it. Absolutely utter hopeless. But not derailed, not capsizing into those thoughts, or what the word is, collapsing, right? Because you all know this. Those thoughts start and suddenly we believe they're true and they now have hold of us and they've sucked us in and we're in it. I don't want to do anything. It's hopeless. My life sucks. Blah, 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 blah. Down and around I go, around and around I go. I didn't go there. This is what we're training for, is sensation. Oh, look at the thoughts that are accompanying this sensation. Do you understand the difference? It's an important but subtle distinction, right? And this is where your power is, in the stability to notice the thoughts, to notice the sensations and allow them to be there. No resistance. No resistance. Is it pleasant? Absolutely not. This is why we do the ice cube. We learn we can handle unpleasant. I can stay with unpleasant. You can stay with unpleasant. Okay, so then I wrote her, I dove deeper and I could literally see the troughs in the sand underneath. I felt the patterns. I felt them as deep, deep beliefs. The things I want to do, nobody else values. So I need to give them up. Now let's unpack that for just a second. Somewhere in me was this belief that if nobody else valued what I did, then I couldn't do it. Because my life had to respond to what made other people happy. And if they weren't respecting or valuing what I was doing, then I need to just give it up and do something that they value and respect. Does this make, are you following me? That's so deep. And this was a moment of literally a hot heat that just spiked through my whole nervous system. And the edges of each of my nerves was exploding in my skin as just hot terror. I don't even want to look at this, but no, It's a sensation. My mind, my body is still. My mind is watching, and I'm watching the sensations. I'm watching my response, my terror to this thought. And I just watch it. And then I have the thought, I need to stifle my joys, my creativity, to keep harmony in relationships and make others happy. Now you will have your version of this thought that feels like literally just like a bucket of hot lead in my stomach. That was, it's just hopeless. This belief, I need to stifle my joys and my creativity, because the only way I'm going to have harmony in my life is if I'm all about making others happy. I can't do what feeds me. I have to do what feeds them. Deep pattern, right? And then the thought from my beautiful Catholic upbringing, it's noble to put others first, to let others go first. And I'm going to tell you, it's not just my Catholic upbringing. My guru's teaching was put yourself second. Put yourself second. Decades of hearing, put yourself second. Well, you can't say that to women, is what I've learned. You cannot use that teaching for women. It works for men, but it does not work for women. And so that's not what I teach anymore. I don't share that teaching anymore with women, because we have spent, most of us have spent most of our lives putting everybody else first. And so there's a nuance to that teaching that is a really important piece. Okay, that was a little bunny trail. So then the last thought was, I don't deserve to have my way. And that, I could see it. I saw it. I felt it. And I didn't run from it. I just, my whole body was having an event. I just stayed with it. And that thought went all the way back to my childhood and my dad and the way I was raised. So I write to Sally. So these aren't new thoughts, but I felt them as delicate strands of awareness coming from a place of deep stillness in a new, non-judgmental, no blame way. Just seeing, and I bold this, really noticing and paying attention. And although I could only sustain this deep awareness for 10 minutes or so, there was also the awareness that these are simply old patterns. They are not truth. You hear that? I didn't sustain it for an hour. I didn't dive in there for a week, which is our fear, right? Our fear is we're going to go there and it's going to suck us in and we're going to be there forever. To me, this was the key freedom in this moment. Was I was just there maybe 10 minutes as each thought kind of did its, whoa, whoa, whoa. But I stayed with it. I saw them as patterns, not truth. Patterns, not truth. And here's what was so amazing. I write her. Those few moments were enough. Afterwards, I felt so much lighter. I had more energy than I've had in weeks. And I realized those patterns just wanted to be seen. They wanted to be noticed, really noticed. My fear in the past was that I would go deep and get stuck in the mire for years and years and never get out. But no, these vasanas have no desire to entangle me. They just want to be noticed. And I feel like if this is what I could give you from this class, is the assurance from my own experience, they don't want to grab you and suck you down. Our fear thinks they're going to. But really, they just want to be seen. They want to be seen and go, oh, wow, you've lived your whole life feeling that you don't deserve to have your way. Oh, wow. And from the clarity of observation, realizing, well, that's not a true thought. It's just an old pattern. And with that awareness now, I can engage in my life in a way where I see that as a tendency, a proclivity, and I can change it. When those old things come up, I see them as old things and I can do it differently. I can be kind to myself. Does this make some sense? Did that help to have the story around it? It's very personal, but when I saw it and I knew we were doing this class, I thought, oh my gosh, should I share it with them? And then I put it down and I thought, nah. But then today, when I realized we're going to have this extra class, I thought this might be the opportunity to give you a real life example of how these teachings operate, how they work, and to get back to, so just to bring it back and then let's hear from you guys. We have karma firing in all these chakras. We have karma firing. The vasanas are held deep, 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 deep down. Some people might even say, you know, there are chakras below the chakra at your tailbone. They are deep, deep, they call them the talus realms. And they might say that these vasanas are actually held down in there. And if we can realize that this is what we came for, we came to learn how to shift and break out of these patterns. This is what we call moksha, M-O-K-S-H-A, freedom. Freedom does not mean not having to live in a community with laws and things like that. Freedom means literally freedom from your thoughts, from those old thought patterns. That freedom, that moksha is your liberation. That's your liberation. So
can you spell that again?
M-O-K-S-H-A. I'd write it down, but I was thinking I'd go sit unless we want to refer to this half-assed drawing again. But so let's do this. Let's take any questions or comments or anything you want to share about this. Gina, yeah.
Can you give another description of the manas?
The manas is your everyday mind. It's like, oh, I need to go to
everyday mind.
My everyday mind. Okay. It's everyday the mind that you need to function. It's not a bad thing, right? Our mind is what helps us, you know, go to the store. It helps us remember to clean the toilet. It's what helps us remember to go pick up our kid, you know, instead of forgetting them. Manas, everyday mind, helps you just, what keeps you going. And what we want to do is we don't want to confuse our everyday mind with this deeper, deeper mind where the wisdom, they call it the body mind, B-O-D-H-I, the higher mind, the enlightened mind, the discriminating mind. Yeah, Natalie.
Thank you. So I have a question. So when you're talking about this, though, what you're saying is, so like the healing of these deeper, I'm not going to say the deep troughs, right?
Vasanas.
The vasanas, right?
Take asana yoga, and just put a V in the front.
Vasanas. The vasanas.
It's like the yoga postures. These are the deep, deep, somebody come up with a word for the V, that are the postures deep in your subconscious that are shaping your thoughts, shaping your responses to the world.
But so what you're saying, so like, let's say that you have one of these experiences and you identify them or identify one of them. What, then what? You've identified it and then that's enough? Or what is the next, what is the work to then smooth that out?
That's enough. Now I'm not running away from the things this thought that the things I do, nobody else values, so I need to give them up. Well, that's not a true thought. That's an old pattern, an old thought. So I go, all right, I need to value what I do. Now, mind you, how many students do I have? And I'm still having that thought, nobody values what I do. I have so many cards and beautiful emails from you folks telling me how much you value what I do, right? But that's not enough to counter the deep undercurrent that nobody values what I do. Did you hear that?
Yeah, but so then how do you counter it?
I value what I do. I show up and I go, you know what? What I'm doing is of value. I was put here to do this. These are people, in fact, this is what my mind goes, that I have a karmic debt to. And I am repaying my debt by sharing these teachings with you. So I change my thoughts and I value what I'm doing. I don't look to my husband or to my kids or my children or my students or my teachers to value what I do. I need to value what I do because what I'm doing is my connection, my service to the great. Does that answer it now?
So I have a Natalie, one thing I've noticed for myself on some of my deep ones, right? I notice them and each time, like it maybe fills that divot more with sand. So each time I notice it and I'm more aware of it to a point where then it just does pop up and it just goes, whew. It's just, does that make sense? So it's not like one and done, or that's not my experience, maybe, but.
No, Kathleen, exactly. And thank you. It does. It's like it just, each time it fills the trough a little bit.
Yeah.
It just fills the trough. Thank you for putting, yes, exactly. I forgot to say that. And it's not one and done. But once you've looked at it, oh, relief. I can look at it again. And it might hurt a little bit, but after a while, it doesn't hurt. It's like, who said everybody has to value what I do? Who said? That's old shit. That's old shit. You know, it's like, I don't deserve to have my way. Yeah, that takes a little bit of working through, conscious working through, but it's about me in here working with it. Lisa, you've had your hand up for a while. Lisa in Oregon. Yeah.
I just had a visual that was sort of similar to what Kathleen was saying, but it's like, I think if those things come back, after we've noticed them, it's like sticking a buoy at the top of the surface. And so when that wave gets a little high and that buoy starts waving, we can say, oh yeah. And then we put that mantra right there. And instead of freaking out on the surface, which ultimately does make those vasanas deeper, we can change what we're doing on the surface, which does eventually smooth out the vasanas. But once we've noticed it, we can say, there that is. And it keeps coming back, but we can lessen it as it goes. And that's the working out as we go, right?
Right. Yes. And I love that you got a visual that works for you. And if every one of us, you know, somehow having a visual or a metaphor, it's a powerful tool. It's a powerful tool when you're working with these things. Brenda.
I think it is without the entire world hearing everything I'm saying in my car. But the other thing I was thinking for Natalie is I know for me, when you, especially if you've been in therapy and you've been in treatment and things like that, there's always a get to the solution and get to the reason and figure it out and dive in deep. And I think what I've learned with Karen is it's more about giving that thing attention takes the power away from it. So you don't necessarily have to go figure out why and where and whatever, as long as you are spending that time and giving that attention, that is kind of where the healing is happening.
Well said. See, it's a good thing there's a group of us here, you know, that's beautiful. Yeah, Julie. Thank you, Brenda. Julie. Can't hear you. We can't hear you, Julie. Julie, can't hear. I yeah. Okay, try again. No. Oh. No. Put it in the chat. Put it in the chat. Okay, Lisa. Well, Julie is typing in the chat. Lisa, yeah.
Did you finish your thought about, you started to say something about circling the spine of the mother three times.
Oh, yes. I know. I didn't finish that thought. Okay. So while Julie is typing, let me finish telling you about the karma thing. You are looking, when you This is how the story goes. I could tell the story a million times. I just love this. It's like you're in between lives. You're up there in the Bardo or the astral realm, the subtle realm, whatever you want to call it, spirit world, you call it whatever you want. And I've heard this in more than one place, but it's like things flash in front of you and you go, you're kind of watching them like you're watching commercials. You're just kind of going. And then one comes with a cool song or something. You go, ooh, that one perks your interest. And that goes, oh, maybe this one. And after a while, you get an assortment of these and you go, okay, I think these are the things I want to work on this next round. So now you know what you kind of want to work on. You go looking for somebody with karma that matches what you want to work on. So you start circling the spines of moms. And you circle three times. Why? Three bodies. Causal, subtle, physical. There's three realms, let's put it that way. So you make sure the karma is compatible in all three realms. So basically you're circling the spine. Let's come back here. And you're going through each one of these chakras and you're saying, is it going to work? It is not going to work. Like if you have the karma to be adopted and the woman you're circling the spine for doesn't have the karma to adopt, boom, you say, oh, not this one. Okay. And you make sure it's all lines up. Then in this teaching, which is so interesting, the child, the soul circulating the spine goes looking for the dad, finds the dad and goes, okay, now you, boom. And there you've got the karma of the dad, which explains those one night stands and one night affairs, you know, where you don't want to tell the husband that it isn't really their baby and, you know, the milkman's child, all these things, right? You blame it on the kid. It's like you chose that. But then what happens is you are now responsible. This is what you came in. You came in for your mom at that point in her life, what she was going through as part of your karma. Any of you who've been in families who are like with my family, my dad was an alcoholic, right? I got the brunt of it. My youngest brother had an entire different upbringing because my dad had gotten sober. So in circling the spine of my mom, what was the karma in her world? Oh, separation, divorce, when he was, you know, just 6 years old. So at any rate, your family environment is what is giving you the fertile ground for the karma you came to work on. And then, yeah, so I think that's where I was going, Lisa. Did that answer it? Okay, so let's see what Julie's chat is here. Okay, you guys, you can open it up too. I'll read it. I spent the last few days on a clear mountain lake. Oh, I floated for hours looking down in the blue water, looking at the bottom. We could see over 100 feet down. It was so clear. I took rocks and watched them fall down to the bottom. This is so beautiful. It is such a stark visual for what we are talking about. Staying present with the depth of the problem is like watching the rock fall to the bottom. I can watch it, but not have to dive all the way down. That's beautiful. That's fucking beautiful. Wow. Julie, thank you. Oh, wow. I don't know. Is that a good note to leave? Is that good? I think that's beautiful. I see Gina nodding, Julie nodding, Judy nodding.
You could really add to that with like the clarity of the water and different vices in your life. And yeah, that's all real good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. All right. So that's kind of what I kind of wanted to cover today. Any other questions or thoughts? We just got a minute or two.
Really quickly, yeah. You said the three times were for the three bodies, and I missed, you said there was like subtle, causal. What were the three?
The physical realm, which you see all around you. The subtle realm, which is the realm of your thoughts, your dreams, those intuitions. Subtle realm is a vast, vast realm. They say it's, you know, 800 to 1,000 times more expansive than the physical realm. I mean, and there's your thought realm, there's your dream realm, there's the higher astral. which is where you might, they might say you go after you, you know, when you're transitioning between lives. And then there's the causal realm, which is when you're in the, that place of feeling very just unified and part of it all, connected to it all. The causal realm is the realm of potential. It's a realm of, for our purposes today, of just no form, just potential. Now, we can break that down, but for today, let's just keep it there. Okay. Brenda, one more and then we'll call it good.
Yeah, I'll share very quickly the whole mother choosing thing. My children are adopted. So when I remember when we first talked about this a long time ago, I was like, wait a minute, that doesn't fit. But it does, because the birth mom that of Natalie, my youngest one, told us that, because, you know, in the world of open adoption, they have a thing, they read our biographies. And she said that she liked us from the minute she saw us. But every time she opened to our thing, Natalie would kick. And so she was like, because she went away from us and like was going to choose someone else, she came back to our picture and Natalie started kicking. So she's like, well, clearly this was what it was supposed to be. So,
Brenda, yeah. That, I just got goosebumps with that. Oh my God. Yeah. Wow. Well, that's a great note. So a lot of food for thought here. A lot of food for thought. And on Monday's practicum, we'll work with the processing of maybe trying to get still enough to look at the vasanas. Okay. How's that sound? All right. You loves. You guys are amazing. I got to go. I got another meeting starting right now. Okay. Bye everybody.